Welcome to Radio Free School.
Once I went on a field trip and you could catch some toads, and once I felt one but I didn't pick one up and it felt very bumpy, but after I had to wash my hands. Mm-hmm. And that's pretty much it.
And why did you have to wash your hands?
Because it was like a special kind of frog. I forget what it was called. And after I had to wash my hands because something would happen to me. So mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it was a frog or was it a toad?
Toad.
It was a toad you held, eh? So do you like toads?
Mm-hmm.
Or are they kind of slimy, or how are they?
Toads are like kind of bigger than frogs.
Okay, so you know a thing or two about frogs too, do you? And toads? Have you seen a toad?
No.
Have you seen a frog?
No.
Oh, have you seen a salamander?
Yes.
I remember you, who had one? Did you have a salamander?
That was Sabrina, she found it, her friend found it.
So, do you know, what else do you know about frogs?
I know that frogs, when they're like, frogs when they're like a tiny little baby, and the
tadpoles?
Yeah.
Okay, so where do they live when they're like tiny little babies?
With their parents.
Do they live out on the land or do they live in water?
Water.
So have you seen tadpoles?
Right
here. Hmm. Oh, here's Sabrina. Sabrina, come along here. Tell me a bit about the salamander that you had. Okay, where'd you get it from? Where'd you get your salamander?
Well, it's kind of like in a rainforest. You'll find it in like wet places and trees. And it's like under rocks. And they like pretty much the water. And one thing is that you don't hold them that much because they're cold-blooded. And yeah, that's pretty much all I know.
But hang on a second though, you had a salamander, didn't you?
Yeah.
Where did you get it from?
Well, I got it because I went to my friend Natasha, and she has like a rainforest in her backyard. So she gets them off from there, and they eat worms and spiders and like insects. Yeah, and
so,
that's all.
So when you took your frog, when you got your salamander, right? How long did it live?
Well, it lives for like a week and a couple days because I didn't really know much about them. So next time before I get one, I'm going to get more advice.
Okay. You didn't know how to take care of it.
Yeah, but I gave it all that Natasha told me what she said to do.
Okay. Was it too cold maybe? Or it was maybe hibernating and you got it out?
I'm not sure. I think it was too cold or it was too hot.
How about frogs and toads?
Well, yeah, I know a bit is that they're really much different. Because some of them, they have different types of feeling, and one has bumps and the other one doesn't. And they both have different names, and they don't eat like different things, but all I know is they eat both flies. And they like much the water, but I don't really know much about toads.
Okay, what is an amphibian? And this is from the Toronto Zoo Adopt a Pond website. What is an amphibian? The word amphibian is derived from the Greek word amphi and bios, which means two lives and refers to the aquatic tadpole and the terrestrial adult stages of all salamanders, newts, frogs, and toads. Amphibians all lay eggs and are characterized by their smooth, moist skin. Amphibians do not drink. They absorb water and much of the oxygen they need through their skin, although most use lungs as well. Some species are active at night and avoid the drying effects of the sun. Others shelter in moist habitats under logs, rocks, leaves, mosses, and ferns. Amphibians shed their skin about once a week. Most frogs and toads eat their skin that splits down the back, which they then pull into their mouth. With their front legs, amphibians are highly advanced animals that are superbly adapted to their environment.
Radio Free School, a show by, for, and about home learning.
Thijs Vermeer, aquatic ecologist from the Royal Botanical Gardens in Burlington, Ontario.
This is one of these seasonally flooded areas. This is actually a really unusual kind of environment. Around Hamilton, it's a swamp forest, which means in the spring, when all the snow melts, it fills up with water and then sort of sits here isolated. The water goes down over the course of the spring and slowly dries up, but a whole group of amphibians come and use these places to lay their eggs as soon as the ice melts and the water's icy cold, and there's still even ice around. And their little ones are able to turn into frogs or salamanders inside of 2 months. It's a certain category of amphibians, but actually most frogs are in that class. And you can actually see the water line on the trees there.
Yeah.
That dark mark, so it was like 2 feet deep here. Our major amphibians here are going to be the American toad, which hops around the drier grass, and the leopard frog, which hops around in the sort of meadowy. Green frogs are in the marsh, but they're one of those frogs that lives in areas where there's always water. Okay. And their tadpoles take a year and a half to grow up to be big ones, so they don't do well in areas that dry up, obviously. So there are kinds that you find in permanent marsh areas, as opposed to seasonally flooded areas.
Do amphibians take care of their young?
The only one that puts any effort into it at all is the tree frog, and it doesn't do that much. It just prepares the nest a lot more, so it prepares the eggs, gives them a little more protection, but then it hops away and leaves them. And then it's up to the tadpoles to make a go of it, and there's usually an awful lot of eggs, so some of them survive, otherwise we'd be buried in frogs.
Snapping turtles, are they amphibians?
Nope, turtles are a reptile. There are 6 kinds of turtles around here. Snapping turtle is one of the more common ones, and the painted turtle. None of them are very common, though, because of what happened to the marshlands being basically lost all their plants, and which means they lost their bugs and everything else, and so the turtles were kind of hungry. Yeah, so this area was basically one of the richer areas you would have found around Hamilton. It's where the major river of the Hamilton region flows in, Spencer Creek, right behind us. And way back in the mid-1800s, Spencer Creek, which used to flow on the other side of Coots Drive over there, wound around, although I'm sure its channel changed quite a lot over the centuries because it's such low gradient an area. But you can still find the old channels over there. You can see them in the spring because they've still got water sitting in them. So they sort of make swampy spots. And but to put the railway through here, I guess it seemed easier to move the whole creek over and dry up the land that's now behind us. And it's been behind this railway bed for about 150 years. And then I guess once you prevented Spencer Creek from flooding out into the marshy area, so this was actually much drier than they must have turned into the idea that you could build a road across it, which is where Cooch Drive came from. So it really all started with the moving the creek for the railway track, though.
I had a question. How long have amphibians been on this earth?
I don't know how long amphibians have been on this earth, but thousands and thousands and thousands of years.
Okay,
you'd have to go to the Royal Ontario Museum and look there.
Well, crocodiles were kind of a little later.
Pretty prehistoric.
Yeah.
So frogs and toads
they
are kind of
changed.
Not as prehistoric as reptiles, but they're sort of intermediate, I suppose. Intermediate. If you have a healthy watershed, you get a nice seasonal flooding of your lowlands around the area, and that's where the frogs and toads, a lot of them go to breed, the amphibians in general. So as long as it floods nicely and the water is clean, you'll have your amphibians and whatnot. But as soon as you start changing the way the land is drained and what's on the surface, and so that's what runs off, your amphibians are usually the first to go because as the watershed gets changed just a bit, it changes the pattern of flooding, and you don't have to change it too much to actually cause a lot of problems for amphibians, because they need, most of them need about 2 months of flooded land to work with. And especially agriculture, the idea is to get the water at least off the surface of the land as fast as possible so you can start farming. That doesn't work for the amphibians.
Chemicals and something like methoprene now, how that affects, apparently the frogs have extra limbs, or is
yeah,
that, what do you think about
that? The business is really not that well understood, although I just saw some more recent information that one of the herbicides used, Roundup, and I don't know, it might be quite a whole range of herbicides that have it, but the substance they put in it to help it dissolve, break, and not necessarily break down, but to help it dissolve into the ground to work, is actually causes the eggs of the tadpoles, or the eggs of the amphibians, to die, basically. They can't incubate anymore. It does something to the cell membrane and prevents them from incubating. So it's not actually even the herbicide, it's the chemical used to disperse the herbicide.
On a hot, hot day in July, five green and speckled frogs sat on a speckled log, eating some most delicious bugs. Yum, yum! One jumped into the pool, where it was nice and cool. Then there were four green speckled frogs. Goop, goop. Four green and speckled frogs sat on a speckled log, eating some most delicious bugs. Yum, yum! One jumped into the pool, where it was nice and cool. Then there were three green speckled frogs. Goop, goop. Three green and speckled frogs sat on a speckled log, eating some most delicious bugs. Yum, yum! One jumped into the pool, where it was nice and cool. Then there were two green speckled frogs. Gulp, gulp. Two green and speckled frogs sat on a speckled log, eating some most delicious bugs. Yum, yum! One jumped into the pool, where it was nice and cool. Then there was one green speckled frog. Gulp, gulp. One green and speckled frog sat on a speckled log, eating some most delicious bugs. Yum, yum! He jumped into the pool, where it was nice and cool. Then there were no green speckled frogs.
Excuse me, are snails amphibians?
Snails are not amphibians. They're in the clam family. Mollusks, actually. So there's clams and snails.
What's herps?
Herps is a collective name for basically turtles and amphibians. Okay. Herpetiles.
So what is an amphibian then?
An amphibian. It's one of those animals that requires water for part of its life cycle. For most of them, it's for laying eggs and rearing their young, but not for all of them. So they are still tied to the water for reproduction, even though they can go on land. A lot of amphibians are actually terrestrial, like tree frogs live in the trees.
Oh, yeah.
Toads hop around the ground, leopard frogs go through the meadow. There's actually only two. There's maybe only two that specifically stay around the water, the bullfrog and the green frog. The rest of them are only there for reproduction, like all the salamanders. A lot of the salamanders are things that burrow into the leaf litter in the forest. Actually, that's almost all the salamanders.
I hardly ever see salamanders.
Yes, it's because they're hiding under the leaf litter. Only time often you can find salamanders is in the spring when they come to the ponds, like the swamp forest here, to lay their eggs. And even then, they're pretty secretive, so it's hard to spot them.
The difference between toads and frogs?
Toads can live in drier areas than frogs. They have a thicker, less water-permeable skin, which helps them keep the water in and not dry up if it's hot. Whereas all the frogs live in areas where there's at least dew all the time on the ground in the morning so they can soak up water.
Would you say that the amphibians are on the decline in the world, worldwide?
Yes, definitely. So as the amphibians are on the decline worldwide because they need those seasonally flooded areas and flooded for a certain period of time in the spring, and as you change the patterns of drainage off the land with especially agriculture, but everything, you just take away areas that they would have used. And if you can't use an area to reproduce in, you're out of business.
So habitat loss and fragmentation.
Habitat loss. In some cases, it's fragmentation. So if you would have had, say, a tree frog, so it'll live in a larger tree under the bark, hides under the large stripped bark. Hmm. And then it has to find a seasonally flooded area in the spring to breed. If there's a big gap in of roads or agriculture. They might not travel from the forest to the pond. They might not be able to make the connection, or they might not be able to get the other way back.
What about predators?
Predators on amphibians? Major predators tend to be herons, actually. So wait, marsh birds, birds that wade around in the shallows and pick out whatever they find living there. So herons are right at the top of the list. But once they're out of the water, it could be raccoons would be a major predator, which, of course, are much more numerous around urban areas, mm-hmm. such as Hamilton.
How can you help amphibians flourish?
Well, you need some nice... Actually, a lot of amphibians are tied to forests. Mm-hmm. So almost all the salamanders are forests, and almost all the frogs are actually tied to either shrubby forests or older forests. So you need some good forest, which happens to also hold the water on the ground, which makes good breeding areas for them.
Some people might think, oh, so what if we lose amphibians? What can you say about that?
In the end, if we lost amphibians, I guess the world would be sadder for it. Actually, I'm starting to see that actually amphibians are pretty important for the health of trees, because they basically live up and down the trunks and they eat the insects that would otherwise chew on the tree. Mm. Of course, that's what feeds the amphibians. But of course, if you get rid of the amphibians, you don't have those insects getting eaten, and trees can get overwhelmed, and then you don't have trees anymore. Or you're restricted to certain species. Although in the end, there'll be some type of insect that comes and gets all the trees. So if you don't have either the birds that eat insects or the amphibians, then your trees get eaten.
Some programs like the Frog Watch and that, and so we started, yeah. You know, I'm just thinking, is that something good? You think?
Oh, yeah. I mean, the idea of most of the programs for monitoring amphibians are more than anything to get people interested in amphibians and start thinking about where amphibians come from and what effect they would have on amphibians if they built a house on something, or just how they link to the environment. So that's where Frog Watch comes in, and actually the marsh monitoring program. Get people out visiting areas where amphibians would live and think about the environment.
I just want to know, is it fair to have a toad or a frog as a pet, you know?
Now, it's hard to keep a frog, right? But a toad, you can do.
Yeah.
They normally don't have a very big area where they would live in. Usually, your garden is something they would live in, depending on how many bugs you have available for them. So we had a big tank. It's really kind of a tame world for them, because no birds are going to hop in and try and catch them, or no snakes. Snakes would be a big predator on toads. It's a lot of work to keep them fed, though.
Uh-huh.
You always got to find more crickets or worms or something.
Yeah, and what do you do in the winter?
That's right. Then it gets tricky. You could set them outside and you could hibernate.
That's what
toads do. Yeah, they bury under the leaf litter. A lot of the frogs go into the water and into the mud, but the frogs stay on the toads stay on the land, because they're normally on land other than when they lay their eggs. So they hide in the leaf litter.
And what happens? What's the hibernation process all about for those guys?
No, once it gets cold, they find themselves a good spot. Usually in November, maybe even late October. They bury themselves because they want to get in a place that's reasonably insulated so they don't freeze. I mean, they can get down to about 0 degrees, but they don't want to freeze themselves, so they need that good insulating layer of leaf litter. Then they just stay dormant until they warm up in the spring. I'm not sure what temperature it has to reach on their body, but at least 5 degrees. And then they become active again, and they go find themselves a pond and lay some eggs.
Mm-hmm. And how long do they live?
I'm not sure how long toads live. I've seen pretty large toads, so they must live up to 10 years if they're lucky.
Look, a frog!
Yeah.
Tiny, teeny,
where?
Baby.
Where?
Right there.
Little duck. Oh, yeah, right, yeah.
There's another
little
one.
Guy. Yeah,
those are toads from this year. So they emerged from being tadpoles maybe 3-4 weeks ago. Now they're on to being toads.
They're growing.
So I'm sure they came from the flooded pond on the other side, which is now dry, but it was flooded long enough for them to grow up to be little toads.
There's around 4 or 5 over here.
Probably. So there would have been, there was probably 20 or 30 toads now that laid eggs out there, which would have added up to, who knows, 25,000 eggs.
Really?
And probably, I'm sure at least half of them would have made it to little toad size, because there aren't very many predators around here for tadpoles. There's only a few herons and snakes. Yeah, I've seen times when there's been, seems like 100,000 little toads just everywhere.
Yeah. I think the only time I noticed there were a lot was when one of the roadkill stats that Brian Pomfret did.
That's right.
Yeah.
There was this one guy, I think it was in Montreal, no, where was he? I don't know, somewhere, but he was trying to get his passage, safe passages
underground
for toads and stuff like that.
Under roads.
You know, so they can get across roads and stuff. That's his passion.
Is it?
Yeah.
It's tricky. You need walls up and down both sides of the road so they won't go over the road. Which becomes really tricky, because then if you build the walls, say, a foot high, there'll be still some animals that can jump it. Then they'll be stuck on the road as they try and figure out, and they have a hard time jumping back out. It's a really hard one to win. Really, the only way you win is if you build the walls like 8 feet high so nothing can jump in, which doesn't make much of a road. So it's just better to build roads, I suppose, in the right hidden spots where they have the least impact. Or the other thing you can do is build them up high, so there's a lot of major bridges for them to go under.
You are listening to Radio Free School on CFMU.
Amphibians are disappearing. And this is also from the TorontoZoo.com Adopt a Pond website. Although many species worldwide have experienced declines in population, amphibian populations are reflecting an especially dramatic decline. The issue of amphibian declines was first raised at the International Conference on Herpetology in 1989 as scientists reported rapid declines in study populations. Calls for concern grew from these globally widespread reports. Over the years, several theories have emerged to try to determine the source of the global decline of amphibians. These theories include 1. Destruction of the ozone layer, resulting in increased ultraviolet radiation penetrating the atmosphere. These UV rays may be especially harmful to amphibians' sensitive skin. 2. Air and water pollution may affect amphibians as they absorb water through their skin. Chemicals and other pollutants may cause deformities, which make them more vulnerable to predation, fungal infections, parasites and disease. 3. Pesticides are a major problem for amphibians. The use of these harmful chemicals can kill or deform offspring. 4. Invasive species displace native animals and marginalize habitat. Habitat destruction may be the most devastating single threat to amphibian population. No one answer has emerged as the reason for declining populations. It is most likely a combination of these theories. The loss of these sensitive creatures may act as a warning that our environment is being dangerously altered and polluted. Amphibians are often referred to as environmental indicators, or the global equivalent of a canary in a coal mine.
Movie review.
Hello,
my name is Madeline,
and I'm going to review a movie called Magic School Bus Hops Home.
It's about frogs.
So the class is at school, and this girl, Wanda, brought her frog.
Okay, Wanda brought Bella her frog.
They're having a field trip, as usual.
They were having a field trip because Bella hopped out of the window when Arnold opened it.
Bella to have some fresh air.
And that's basically it.
Now,
what's Bella's habitat? Real one.
Outside. A beaver pond. Mm-hmm. And she needs to hide. She doesn't need silly toys. Well, she needs a beaver pond, bugs to eat. Okay, bugs to eat, other frogs to play with, lily pads to sit on,
a safe place to hide!
A safe place to hide.
Herman.
Huh? Herman. She needs Herman. You married Herman, you see.
Who is Herman?
Another frog.
No.
I'm by, okay, recording.
Amphibians of Ontario. If you believe there is a little magic when frogs sing, adopt a pond. No one wants a silent spring. I don't know who the poet for that is. Now I'm going to explain about these amphibians of Ontario. They're all amphibians, so don't worry. Okay, American toad. Leadback phase. Four toed salamander. Blue spotted salamander. Spotted salamander. Jefferson salamander. Red spotted newt. Now to frogs. The leopard frog. I don't see much leopard spotted. Bullfrog. Ontario's largest frog. Green frog. That must be the one I saw on the trail. Wood frog. Mink frog. Pickerel frog. Blanchard's cricket frog. Grey tree frog. Striped chorus frog. Boral chorus frog. Spring peeper.
Amazon is calling,
help this planet Earth.
With voices from the jungle,
help this planet Earth.
Hear the tree that's falling,
help this planet Earth.
Rainforests are crying,
help this planet Earth
to stay.
Up to you.
Ocean's wave is rumbling.
Help this planet Earth.
With voices from the seaway.
Help this planet Earth.
Waters for the drinking. Come on and help this planet Earth. Beluga whales are singing.
Help this planet Earth
to stay. Got to see it through. Oh, evergreen, evergreen. At this point in time,
it's up to me, it's up to you.
Right now is when we're needed. We can all do something. The young, the old, working together to help this planet Earth. Cause the more we get together, the more we
help this planet Earth.
So come all United Nations,
help this planet Earth.
Children of one mother, won't you
help this planet Earth?
With love for one another, yeah, yeah.
Help this planet Earth to stay evergreen, evergreen,
as it was in the beginning.
You've got to see it
through. Oh, evergreen,
evergreen.
At this point in time, it's up to me and it's up to you. Come on and help this planet Earth. Ever green and ever blue.
Help this planet Earth.
It's up to me and it's up to you to
help this planet Earth.
Stay ever green and ever blue.
Help this planet Earth.
Oh, help this planet Earth. Yeah, help this planet Earth.
The end.
I'm gonna wrap myself in paper. I'm gonna daub myself with glue. Stick some stamps on the top of my head. I'm gonna mail myself to you.
Contact Radio Free School at grassroots@hwcn.org or mail P.O. Box 19, 1280 Main Street West, Hamilton, Ontario, Canada, L 8S1CO.